T.H. Huxley, like Sir Karl Popper, was turned down for a professorship in Sydney. How different would history have read if either had stayed in Oz? T.H. went on to champion Darwin, because Charles Darwin was always too shy to stand up for himself, and became forever famous. But why on earth are Dr. Susan Lawless students at La Trobe University now writing to him when he's dead?
When I was T.H. Huxley, writing from London in 1880, I didn't sound like Susan Lawler. I was more direct, I was more honest, more funny, more subtle, and much more critical, at least at first. Because the first year I became T.H. Huxley, about 10 students withdrew from our course within days of receiving Huxley's letters. Seriously. The very next lecture was poorly attended, which was unusual. And then an email arrived listing the names of students who had dropped out of our course. I ran to the secretary and confessed that I thought it was my fault. She comforted me, saying every one of them had given her reasons, none of which had anything to do with a dead evolutionary biologist. But at least one student said to me in our afternoon laboratory class, "You were mean to me." I protested, of course, that I didn't write the letter. T.H. Huxley did. And that he wasn't mean, exactly, just more straightforward than I am. I did not say that Huxley did not gladly suffer fools, because that would have been mean. But this was the secret to Huxley's success. Success, you ask? Students dropping out of university and complaining of abuse? I should clarify that without Huxley, I verge on the maternal. I am well loved by my students, and I'm known as a softie. This is why some of them found it so hard to hear what someone other than me had to say about their written work. The boy who complained got over it, I think, and the students dropped out because I gave them feedback too soon. They got their letters from Huxley a couple of days before the census date, which in a university is the date when you can drop out without paying for the subject. Half a dozen students always leave at that time. It couldn't all be my fault. Huxley has to take some of the blame. For starters, he was Darwin's bulldog. It is possible that if he had not defended and supported Charles Darwin in London during the last half of the 1800s, I would not be teaching evolution and genetics at all. I would certainly be teaching it in a different way. Secondly, he wrote a wonderful book about crayfish, and because I work on Australian crayfish, my family gave me his book for Christmas. In it, he made some drawings of dividing cells and wrote about how interested he was in what was going on in the nucleus. Part of my job is to teach my students the fundamentals of cell division. We call it meiosis. And because it seems so dry, my students used to forget this critical information almost as soon as they learned it. And finally, Huxley captivated me with his writing. He wrote at a time when the quill was still an important tool, and correspondence was an essential aspect of scientific inquiry. Reading his words, I began to dream about my students writing clearly and thoughtfully. It is an unfortunate aspect of teaching science that our students do not believe that writing is a skill that they need to acquire. Some of them even chose to do science at university because they prefer to memorize factual material. Many of them have told me that I should not care about their grammar and spelling because I teach science, not English. But English is not like other school subjects. It is the condition of academic life. In the past, my senior students eventually came to terms with this after years of writing essays, but the commencing students, especially the ones straight out of high school, completely rejected this notion. However, these days, youngsters have a passion for writing that Huxley shares. They have a flair for correspondence. It is a condition of their social life. The emails and texts and messages that they send each day may rival the number of words Huxley wrote daily with his quill. There is only a difference of quality. So I had this bright idea. I would get my students to write a letter to T.H. Huxley in response to his 1880 book and tell him what was really going on in the nucleus of the cells of the crayfish. They had to be polite and use proper English, so that T.H. would understand them. And they had to understand meiosis. But since it was in their textbook and had been covered by lectures, this should not have been difficult. And then I had another idea. Instead of covering their letters with red ink, which they would ignore, I would write them a letter back. And because Huxley did not know he was marking students' essays, he did not give them a grade. They could tell from the letter whether he liked their letter or not. Either he dismissed their letter as a hoax by local school children, which was likely if their grammar and spelling was below par, or he engaged with them as a fellow scientist. I put in hints to their grades and explained these when I handed the letters back. If he invited you over to dinner, you got an A, and if he quoted Wordsworth, you got at least a B, and so on. All that remained was for me to become Huxley. I have done this assignment 3 years in a row now, and my family and colleagues know what it means when I say, "I'm Huxley this week." I get a little bit grumpy, a little impatient. I do not tolerate sloppy thinking. I use proper English, even while speaking, and become very critical of poor English in the written form. I drink too much red wine, and I write 60 letters in less than a week. One of the reasons it's easy for me to become T.H. Huxley is that we have some rather fundamental things in common. We both have families, lots of friends, and a full intellectual life. Like me, he was opposed to racism, sexism, and he was passionate about both religious and intellectual freedom. He was a man well ahead of his time. The first year I became Huxley, I may have enjoyed it a bit too much. Stepping out of myself, I felt free to express my dismay at the bad grammar, sloppy expression, and uncritical thinking that has made me and every other university lecturer justifiably grumpy at times. As Huxley, I did not hold back. I wrote it how I saw it, as if I were writing a scientific review, and I felt that I was honest for the first time in 17 years of university lecturing. But I probably enjoyed myself too much. Each year since, Huxley has mellowed a bit. And this in itself may not be such a good thing. My head of department thinks our current third-year students, who were the first exposed to Huxley's critique, are the best writers our department has ever seen. In other words, he thinks I'm on to something. So the Huxley letters have grown into a tradition. They have even helped me win several teaching awards. Whenever I talk about the Huxley letters, people want an illustration. So here is a letter from Huxley to a student that did not receive a very good grade. "Dear Miss A, I doubt very much that you have seen many of the things which I have. I have seen many things, enough for 10 normal London lifetimes, and I can see by your childish handwriting and grammar that you are very young. Excuse me for doubting that you have come up with a process called meiosis. The word is beyond you. I cannot believe that someone who cannot spell a line would think of it. Besides, I've had recent correspondence telling me that an Oscar Hertwig in Germany described it several years ago. In any case, I do not believe in a theory that withholds important genetic information. Surely the point of such information is to allow it to go into the next cell? You are vague on many points. If you want to become a scientist, you must learn to be specific and to know what you are trying to say. I have no idea what you mean when you say haploid cells have one of each type of characteristic. I do not mean to be harsh. I have daughters myself, and I do not think your gender prevents you from a career in science. But if you write to me again, please be truthful and try to explain yourself with fewer but more apt words. Sincerely, T.H. Huxley. P.S. You can call me Uncle Hal." It was possibly the first honest feedback this student ever received about her writing. It may not have done her any harm. Indeed, most of the students from that first year tell me that they have kept their letters from T.H. I doubt they have kept all their other essays. They knew it was an experiment, but they urged me to continue using the approach. Interestingly, the next time I was handing the Huxley letters back, the senior students chose to wait outside my lecture theatre to counsel and reassure the young ones who had just received the bad news. Then those students thanked me for the experience and urged me to do it again. So I still turn into Huxley once a year. Here is another letter to a student who did a slightly better job. "Dear Mr. B, thank you for your letter all the way from Australia. I have a fondness for the fauna of your continent. Just last year, the platypus had me drawing phylogenies of early mammals and reptiles. I am still unsure if mammals such as you and I came from proto-mammals like the platypus or reptiles like the dinosaurs. Unfortunately, your news of discoveries was mitigated by your not knowing the real title of my book, and by a certain casual approach to the written word, which may be due to the remoteness of your location. Tell me, when it is shearing time in Albury, does every man, woman, and child have to help, as I have heard? It pains me, too, to mention that when chromosomes double, they will not make two panes, as you say, or even two pairs, which by my count is four. I wish I knew what you meant by cells all with an individual makeup. If I did, I might see your discovery as news. Finally, reproductive cells do not form four total individuals, because individuals are not created until fertilization, at which point, I might add, the sperm and egg lose their individuality. I'm glad you like my book. Sincerely, T.H. Huxley. And finally, to complete the set, here is a letter that Huxley wrote to someone who wrote him a letter that he liked. Dear Miss C., you did not alarm me at all. In fact, you delighted me. I can see by your name and signature that you are female and relatively young, but the depth of your observations astound me. You may not know that London University changed their charter 6 years ago, allowing women to gain degrees. Furthermore, the only woman in my first science degree topped her year. Perhaps you have heard of Miss McConish, who has been my demonstrator for many years, but is now much distracted and often in the newspapers with this women's rights movement. I would love to discuss the implications of your observations further. My wife Nettie and I have the pleasure of guests on Fridays at 4 Marble Place. Do come and join us. Come soon if you are unemployed or idle. I need another demonstrator in the microscope lab at South Kensington. I am astounded by the idea that information is passed to every new cell as particulate matter. I hope you will forgive an old agnostic for quoting Wordsworth. Not in entire forgetfulness, and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home. Sincerely, T.H. Huxley. P.S. My friends call me Hal. I think that the Huxley letters have been successful on several counts. My students appreciate that their feedback is just for them. It is personal, readable, and unique. Most of them took it to heart. It also forced them to think about the history of science and of ideas, which is never a bad thing. And it pointed out to them in a very concrete way the importance of the written word to the progress of science. You see, it does not matter how clearly we think or how cleverly we solve problems. If we cannot express these solutions to others, if we cannot inspire and engage and communicate, our ideas will be lost. From my perspective as a university lecturer, as a scientist, and as a citizen of planet Earth, there has never been a more important time to communicate clearly about important scientific matters. The secret of T.H. Huxley's success was his ability to persuade and explain in English the exciting ideas of his era. I am so grateful that he continues to inspire me. He has helped me tell my students that the way they express themselves matters. He really did help me teach my students how to write.
Susan Lawlow, she lectures in genetics and evolution at the Albury-Wodonga campus of La Trobe University. Next week, Ian Plimer answers his critics. I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.